welcome to the Rufus Project, your fortnightly guide to whatever we're finding interesting at the time. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and very shortly you will also be hearing from my good friend, co-host and king of cult cinema in Brisbane, Christian Fletcher. Well, what do we have in store for you in this podcast? So glad you asked. I'm going to have a look at the new Marvel Netflix team-up with the release of the Daredevil TV series. Christian and I talk Ishtar and see if it is redeemable. And I'm very happy to announce the return of having a very special guest, Rachel Lee, who runs one of Brisbane's best Bollywood sari dance studios, has a great chat with us with regards to Bollywood movies and exactly what is happening Bollywood related in the local area. Of course, we've got the geek news, upcoming events, and yet another awesome competition. That's enough of that for now, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Wow, the geek news over the past fortnight. I mean, really, I could go one of two ways. And frankly, I'm a bit over reporting on stupidity. So I'm going to do a really, really quick summary of that stuff first. And then we got some awesome news at the end. So basically, VPN blah blah, site blocking could cause VPN blocking. HBO Game of Thrones first four episodes leaked, mass piracy. People try to access HBO now to get Game of Thrones legally, and HBO is now blocking them if they're not in the US. What a bunch of stupid twats. Optus is realizing Netflix is taking lots of the bandwidth, so now they want to charge Netflix for some of their bandwidth. What a bunch of idiots. Oh, God, and Village Roadshow made a submission showing that Graham Burke, the CEO, is still crazy. All that's out there, go look it up. Frankly, I've had more than enough of that over this past fortnight. Let's talk about some good stuff. First up, you may have heard me talk about Night of Terrors on more than one occasion. And again, if you go back through the archive, we have that great chat with Ben McKenzie quite a few episodes ago. But Night Terror Season 2 has been funded, which means as a backer, I'm going to get my hands on Night Terror Season 2 first. Oh yeah, looking forward to that big time. The other stuff in the past fortnight is there's been a bit of a trailer bonanza. We've had the Ant-Man official trailer. Jurassic World released another trailer, which just looks absolutely goofy, but still looks glorious. I'm actually kind of excited to see that one. The Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice trailer leaked, so Warner Brothers did the sensible thing and released the full trailer. And I've got to admit, I do kind of find it compelling. I did not like Man of Steel. I've got to admit that last Superman movie did nothing for me. And I'm not really the biggest fan of the Chris Nolan Batman trilogy, but let's see where they go with this. It did have a little bit of taste of the Dark Knight Rises, the iconic Batman vs. Superman graphic novel by Frank Miller. Within there. I've linked all these trailers below, so you can check that out. But of course, the big trailer that came out was Star Wars The Force Awakens. Yep, the first trailer is out. It looks pretty damn impressive. I'm excited. That's it. I'm going to wrap up the geek news right now on a high. Let's get on with everything else. Woohoo! Let's face it, there is a lot of superhero stuff heading our way. Are we going to get overexposed? I guess that's yet to see, especially with Age of Ultron launching and Ant-Man coming soon. What do we have besides that? Well, from the TV side of things, we have Marvel and Netflix teaming up to release Daredevil. Now, this was quite a risk, I suppose, for them, given that the movie that was released quite a few years ago is generally panned even to this day. I probably should put that on a redeeming features list. Anyway, no, that's getting beside the point. Probably the first interesting thing with regards to this new TV series is that Netflix launched it at the same time in every single area that has Netflix. What this means is if you look at the piracy news, especially with Daredevil, Australia is a lot lower on that list when compared to other things like, say, Walking Dead or Game of Thrones. Perhaps this might be a way to tackle piracy. No, I won't get into that. This isn't the news. This isn't a rant. No, I'm here to actually review the Netflix series Daredevil. The story of Daredevil follows the character of Matt Murdock, an attorney who was blinded by a chemical spill when he saves an old man in a traffic accident when he was 9. Upshot is, he has heightened senses for everything else. And of course, logically, he turned out to be a martial arts master and quite a badass. Now, what you get from the TV series is a very gritty, very violent take on this character. The main players, you've got Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock slash Daredevil, Deborah Ann Woll as Karen Page, Alden Henson plays Foggy Nelson, who's Matt Murdock's attorney partner in their law firm. They're trying to get up and running when Matt isn't off beating up bad guys. And quite an astounding performance by Vincent D'Onofrio, I hope I said that right, as Wilson Fisk, who essentially is the bad guy in the overarching storyline. A special mention also needs to be made for Toby Moore, who plays Wilson's right-hand man, James Wesley. Look, you really can't fault the performances in this. Everyone performs wonderfully, and the characters certainly can be related to, and you do want to see what happens to each individual person within the overarching story. Where Daredevil differs from the other superhero properties is with that level of violence and the sheer gratuitousness of the fight scenes. There is blood, there is cracking of bones, there are wounds. It is very bloody. Not to the point of full-on gore, nevertheless, you do find yourself going, ooh, on more than one occasion. In fact, I did notice that a number of people reporting on Daredevil did actually run stories just on the fight scene at the end of episode 2, which is set just in one corridor and is all done in one take and yet needs to be seen to be believed. It is probably one of the best fight scenes I think I've ever seen in a TV series. What lets Daredevil down a little bit, though, is the fact that it is so very, very serious and so very, very earnest. There are a couple of lighter moments in there. There's a bit of a flashback where you get to see how Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson meet when they're both studying and working at a soulless law company. It makes a nice change, but for the greater part of the series, it is just such a seriously played show. And that does drag down the pacing on a number of occasions. I really find that I couldn't sit through more than a couple of episodes at a time without wanting to actually just do something else. And not because I wasn't enjoying it, but simply because the uneven pacing kind of exhausts you. But look, if you're looking for something different in amongst all the superhero stuff out there, the Netflix version of Daredevil really is an adult superhero show. It's gritty, it's bloody, it's violent, and it is very, very, very well made. I highly recommend you check it out.
Good and evil. Sometimes the difference between the two is a sharp line. Sometimes it's a blur. Sometimes we have to do things outside of the law.
We're gonna make a difference. I know it doesn't feel like it sometimes, but we are.
You're blind, but you see so much.
I hear things.
You know what they call stuff like that? Gifts. I'm gonna train you. Use it.
There are other ways to see.
Boy. Oh boy.
welcome back to the Redeeming Features. And if you were listening last podcast, you probably remember that Christian suggested a little film from 1987 by the name of Ishtar. So, Christian, this was your choice. So what can you tell us about this movie?
Okay, well, I suppose the best thing for me to do is sum up possibly the plot. So we've got a very Simon and Garfunkel-ish group called Chuck Clark and Lyle Rogers. Now, this singing duo, you know, released possibly some of the worst songs you've ever heard. They don't know this. That's possibly part of the joke. They're given a job over in Morocco, and no one else would take it, but these two bumbling fools take the job, and they end up getting mixed up with a woman named Shira, who is a mysterious woman who's based over there. And let's just say, without kind of going into too much detail, they get involved with leftist guerrilla groups, gun sellers, all sorts of things like that, the CIA, and problems ensue. But probably the biggest enticement for me to suggest this during the first place, Trevor, you know, and this being the first time I'd seen it, was the fact that you can't read about the history of Hollywood or the history of, you know, possibly bad films without hearing reference to Ishtar. It's been referred to as one of the worst films of all time. But it's also one that you cannot discuss without mentioning its budget and its background, you know, and a lot of cult cinema and a lot of cult movies in general. It's very much not the film itself, it's what went on behind the scenes. But after having seen it, and obviously I'll get your opinion, Trevor, having seen it, I believe there was a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes and just as much garbage being put on screen as was happening behind the scenes. So it's quite interesting being able to actually finally, to see the film that I'd heard so much about. To give you a bit of a background, the film was made for $51 million and made back $14 million. So that's sort of giving us a look at sort of one of the biggest box office flops of all time. But, you know, this sort of raised a bit of curiosity in me because, Trevor, I think I'd mentioned last time when I suggested it, you know, I've heard so many people defend the film. Martin Scorsese said it's one of his favourite movies, or is his favourite movie. Quentin Tarantino is a huge fan as well. So, you know, it makes you start to realise maybe I shouldn't listen, you know, buy into the hype. Maybe I should just watch this movie for what it is. Well, we watched the movie for what it is, and, yeah, maybe I should have listened to the hype. So, Trevor, Ishtar from 1987, what are your initial thoughts on the catastrophe, I mean, film?
Yeah, well, spoiler.
I think I get the feeling it's already a bit bad.
Sure. Well, I mean, just before we get to our opinion, just suppose a few little things. You already mentioned the budget and the take, and you know what? There are good movies out there that were quite high budgets that didn't make their money back. And you look at the IMDb page, and it's rated 4.1 out of 10. Now, that's around a slightly below average score. Certainly we've looked at movies quite a bit lower. But to, give us a grounding point and a base point to work from, I went to Amazon to check out the reviews, and they are quite varied. So I thought we'll start at the low point. And there is a review here by one V. Rizzoli, with the great tagline of "Ishtar is as bad as they said." Although it can be excused as being mostly fantasy, I mean, being made in 1987 and being ahead of its time, in defense, it does have some interesting things to say about a government's involvement in the Middle East, but it is so blatantly unfunny as a comedy. It rightfully should be an embarrassment to Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty, especially Mr. Beatty, who is so woefully out of sorts here, I'm surprised he had survived it if, well, I think he was painfully too old for shampoo. And here, when you'd expect him to turn on his obvious sexuality, they downplayed that. He has not any at all. Well, I really should have read this first. Which is like expecting a bushel basket to hide a bonfire. Elaine May should be embarrassed too as the writer and director. I must say, I don't know why she used a pseudonym on the screenplay for Otto Preminger's Such Good Friends, as it was infinitely funnier than this bomb. The singing duo and their songs, mostly credited partially to Paul Williams, are so unbelievably bad and so unbelievable that they could give lasting credence to their choice of career for 5 minutes, let alone a seeming lifetime shows the depth to the bottom this film exhibits for the talent involved. Holy dooly.
Oh, gosh.
Only Isabel Ajani deserves credit for being able to cry so effectively as she typically can do and create a sympathetic character, although otherwise false historically. with photography by Vittori Storaro. The Sony Columbia Blu-ray is good with only previews as an extra. Given its improbable release date, it becomes really a curiously stale and awful fantasy in a land of cliches. Looking to rewatch it is like suggesting torture.
Well, Trevor, as someone who has just recently finished watching it, I can actually see where she's coming from, or this person's coming from. So. But interestingly, they touched on a lot of things that, you know, I sort of went, I must chat to you about that. So, and probably the first thing that stood out to me was what I've read, which was the Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman being the two leads. There was originally Dustin Hoffman was you know, Warren Beatty being more of the ladies' man, they made a decision to sort of swap the roles around. So Dustin Hoffman was played up as the sort of the sex symbol, which is always sort of hard to come to terms with. And yeah, Warren Beatty does seem like he's quite out of it and almost, you know, trying to act someone who's not so typecast in his normal sort of characters, but as a result is completely sort of out of sync with the rest of the film. And I don't know if it felt like this for you, Trevor, but you know, you're sort of in the opening scenes of the film, you're given kind of a crash course in the background of the guys. You know, it's sort of, you know, you sort of see what happens up to this point where, you know, there are these really bad, you know, really bad musicians. And hey, to that reviewer, it was intentional for the film, the songs, to be really bad. Apparently Paul Williams said it was the best fun he ever had scoring a film because he could just come out with these absolute terrible movies. I mean, songs. And I've got, what's one of the songs is called Hot Fudge Love, Dangerous Business. Oh, okay. Yeah, there's quite a few. And but I actually felt, Trevor, in that first 30 minutes, which seemed to go on for a while, where they were sort of doing the whole building up the background, if they hadn't even gone to Ishtar, they could really possibly have built a movie around the concept of these two, I suppose, this singing duo who thought they were really good but are actually quite bad. And I felt as soon as they brought the Ishtar stuff in and sort of I know they had to take them into, you know, give them a fish out of water scenario, but I just felt as soon as it went to Ishtar, it lost any kind of entertainment value, even though at the start it wasn't that entertaining. But I just felt that, you know, it got you in at the start and then just lost me straight away. So did you feel the same with that, Trevor?
Yeah, I mean, mentioning the songs, it does start with them trying to write this song called Dangerous Business. And, like, from the initial get-go, and, like, some of the lyrics, when you first hear them, you just go, okay, yeah, that's kind of funny. But then the one joke just keeps going on. There's so many shots of them beside a piano just trying to work out these various lyrics. And it's like this same joke. And the first act is essentially this one joke over and over again. So that got tiring very, very fast. And then when the one character who I felt had any spark of personality in this movie, being Dustin Hoffman's girlfriend, played by Carol Kane, who, let's face it, Carol Kane's great. But when she left and just disappeared from the scene, and then Dustin Hoffman gets suicidal, it's like, it just suddenly got really bleak and depressing. So not only was I completely worn out in the first half hour by a constant barrage of the same gags over and over and over and over again, suddenly it just goes black and bleak, which is obviously meant to be, hey, they're at their all-time low, here's this opportunity to work for not much money, but have a regular gig over in Morocco. So I could sort of see what they were trying to do, but yeah, the actual way it was done was painful.
Oh, and it almost felt like to me that they've taken possibly something that would have worked as a 45 minute or a, you know, a TV episode or something like that and milked it to something that lasts almost an hour and 40. It's this plot that almost didn't really sustain the lengths of time that they were trying to fill in. And I think maybe a lot to do with them shooting on location or the thoughts of them going to Ishtar and Morocco was more just, oh gosh, if we take it there, it'll at least give the audience something nice to look at. But even then, Trevor, I don't see where this $51 million is on screen, because you mentioned how, you know, the early scenes were quite bleak and all that, but even in their style and their look, that I don't know, it might have just been the copy that I was watching it from, but I just felt that it was very, Yeah, you thought as soon as it goes to Ishtar, it'd be this, you know, really fantastic scenery and all that. But even then, it was kind of, And a lot of what you read about the film, or if you see a lot of trailers and things like that, there's always these lot of scenes in the desert, and you think it's going to happen there. And really, Trevor, they feel like they're only in the desert for like 20 minutes. I was waiting the whole movie. You're going to get to the bloody desert because this movie might actually get good, but it doesn't. So that's one thing that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and like, they try to throw in so much, like, you know, you get past that bit, then it cuts to that explorer and his assistant finding the holy map, and it tries to go Indiana Jones with a chase scene, but you don't actually get to see much of the chasing at all. and then these guys turn up, they get met at the airport by, I've got to remember her name now. See, so much of this I've just forgotten because, frankly, it's a very forgettable movie.
Exactly.
And but yeah, they're met by the resistance fighter Shira, played by Isabel Ajani, and then all focusing very much on Dustin Hoffman. They get to Morocco. The CIA gets involved. It turns into a very low-key spy thriller with some highly inane dialogue.
Oh, gosh, you know, and like what that reviewer mentioned earlier, too, so unfunny, too. Like, this is comedy that, you know, I don't think I probably laughed once. I don't know if that was just me, but it really just felt like, yeah, it was trying to go into this whole Indiana Jones spy thriller territory. And it really, well, I got the feeling towards the end that they were just trying to throw in every possible cliche they could, you know, the whole, not that I want to give away too much, but you mentioned that Shira had the map, you know, let's just say they discover a map on themselves, let's just say that. And there's also, you know, the run-in with the gun sellers in the middle of the desert and things like that. It just felt like they were throwing all these last-minute cliches in just to try and tie it all up, and it really just didn't. But then, it's so hard to say this without spoiling it, but let's just say then you've got the absolute way they tie it up, Trevor. You know, the whole, let's just say the singer's become quite popular. But the way they tied it up like that, I just cringed and went, oh, God, is that how you're ending it?
yeah. So, I mean, look, the redeeming features, seriously, we've got to stop worrying about spoilers because there's no way we could do this properly without giving away spoilers. And this movie, I don't think spoilers make any difference because, frankly, if you get to the end of this movie, I'm thinking that you could probably do some sort of endurance test. And people that make it to the end of the movie and actually come out with any sort of glint of hope in their eyes after watching it get a prize.
I'm sure that would only be a handful, if even a handful of people.
Yeah. So, but like, you know, they get to Ishtar and, you know, they're trying to show you it's oppressed. And how they show you oppressed is every time there's a shot of the street, there's a recorded announcement in English, just basically repeating that there's a curfew. That's how they indicate oppression.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But they set up around this, they set up this convoluted plot, and in the middle of it, Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman are just these two ignorant, stupid characters, and you know, you've got funny movies out there based on stupid characters. They're not funny. They're just stupid. And the more it goes on, the less funny it gets. And considering that I was only fractionally amused at the very start of this movie, you got to imagine by the end of it, I pretty much just kept flicking and seeing how long it had to go.
Oh, Trevor, I think it's so good to hear that I wasn't the only one that did that.
It just gets so painful.
Oh, look, and the fact, as I mentioned, being an hour 40 movie, and, you know, you're an hour in and you start to scratch your head, or even 40 minutes in and scratch your head and go, what are they going to do for the next hour?
Yeah.
But yeah, as you mentioned, Trevor, it was kind of, I think you said vaguely amusing, you know, for the first 5 or 10 minutes. And you know, I agree that, you know, there might actually be something here, but nah, it just didn't, you know, sustain it. And Yeah, and you know, I didn't notice so much the dialogue until the very end when I was mentioned when the when all the sort of spy thriller, you know, elements come in. You've got the helicopter pilot, you know, just stating the absolute obvious, like, Jesus Christ, they're shooting at us. Just like, oh, this dialogue, and you're going, oh gosh, of course they're shooting at you. It's so obvious. And then I think there's a part later where they're trying to find the gun sellers. I can't remember the actual term they use for them. And they're like, where are they? And the next thing, he's pretty much his line straight after is, there's the gun sellers, there they are, there. And you're just like, oh. And that was actually the first time I noticed how inane the dialogue was towards the end. And that kind of, you know, sort of spoke on what I mentioned about how they were just trying to tie up all these sort of, I suppose, subplots. But even calling them subplots, they don't deserve that title. So, you know, it was just, they just tried so much to tie it all up and it just didn't really work. And I don't know, Trevor, I also felt really sorry for the camel. Did you feel sorry for the camel? I did.
Okay, fine. I felt sorry with the camel, but when they were leading the camel through the market and it was basically knocking people over.
That was hilarious.
I think the only reason I found that funny was just because of how terrible the rest of this movie was.
And, well, the fact too, you know, for those people that will eventually watch it is, the camel was blind.
Yes.
Of course, like natural, a lot of things can, ensue from that, but I got to admit, I love seeing when filmmakers, you know, how they try different effects. I love the shots when they're actually talking, you know, two of them are hiding under the camel, and it's so obvious they've just used this fake leg to represent the camel that they're leaning against. I had a bit of a chuckle with that. So, hey, Trevor, we might have found the only redeeming feature of the film, just that one little bit when the camel's knocking people over.
I think it's hard to say that a moment where you have some slapstick in the middle of what is essentially a very bleak and I'll tell you what, I found some bits in this downright depressing. I mean, when they were basically dying of dehydration in the desert and then leads into the auction where they try to get water and Dustin Hoffman has to pretend to be the auctioneer who can speak all these different Arabic dialects. It's like, it just was so terrible. And, oh, dear God, there was no chemistry at all between Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman. It's meant to be a buddy. You can tell it's meant to be a buddy movie, but there's just was nothing in there that convinced me these guys were buddies.
Oh, look, God, I get more feeling of a buddy film out of Some Like It Hot, and they were both dressed as women, you know. But yeah, I got the same thing too, and I get the feeling that, not, you know, from what you hear, apparently both actors are, what's the word I'm looking for, not hard to work with, maybe that is it, but yeah, they were very much, a lot of egos would have been at play, and I think in many ways it was almost like, you know, pick me, it wasn't trying to work together as a, creating a really likeable sort of duo. But yeah, they were almost like vying for the attention, or who's the star of this movie, you know. But then looking back, you know, just mentioning that, it makes me think of, you know, like when they're performing and the songs like that, and how they're performing these songs are just so bad, but they think they're so good. And it does make you wonder, maybe they were going for the whole tongue-in-cheek thing. But Trevor, I don't think I should give them that much credit, the filmmakers. You know, a couple of things have come up in my mind and I'm gone, maybe they were doing, this was supposed to be like this, but nah, I don't think so. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit.
Well, I mean, the big gag is that they're bad songwriters and bad singers, and, you know, they think they're good. I can see that they were going for that angle. But again, it just gets driven into the absolute ground in the opening of the movie. And then all of the stuff that's happening around them. And you mentioned the running of the movie, and I mean, seriously, it's like 90 to 100 minutes into this extended, torturous, pain film that they start to get even an inkling of what is actually going on around them.
Oh, I know. And it's just like, God, are you guys that dumb and bumbling, you know? And maybe that was the whole thing, you know, that they were supposed to just be these stupid characters. But it was just almost like you mentioned before, you just felt, you just couldn't relate to them, or you couldn't find any, it just didn't feel, yeah, you didn't really care about them, to be honest. Like, it just felt like it was one guy doing something behind the back of the other one. And you know, of course, you've got the character Shira, that we were talking about, was it Isabel Adjani? Sorry, I was just trying to double check the name. And but she almost seemed like she was just thrown between the two of them, and one was deceiving the other. And yeah, it was quite quite confusing. And it's funny because a lot of films like this, when you've got the sort of male buddy films, they always have to be a female interest. And you think to yourself, oh, gosh, this failed on every possible level, I think. And well, for a start, her character's perceived as being a boy for pretty much most of the movie. So that adds a whole new level to it.
Yes, yes. And I believe that was also meant to be an hilarious gag.
Oh, and especially, the interesting thing is apparently she was actually Warren Beatty's girlfriend at the time, and apparently afterwards their relationship was quite strained. I think it might have something to do with the fact that she's probably cast in one of her only movies playing aside her boyfriend as a boy. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was quite strange. So I can easily see how their relationship would have been strained. But yeah, no, it just felt so, yeah.
And then...
bleak. You summed it up, Trevor. The word bleak is pretty much, that is that film. Like,
and then once they had their resolution, they just go back to the original gag of the movie where they're this terrible singing-songwriting duo in another extended sequence of them singing bad songs. It's like, this is the exact same joke that I was sick of within 5 to 10 minutes of the opening of this movie, and I've got to sit through an extended sequence of that same gag over and over again.
And it's like too, like that, like it's interesting. They've got probably the only good thing I can give them credit for is at least they have a song that they sing on stage at the end called Ishtar, which is obviously inspired by their experiences. They could have just done a 1 minute thing of that, credits come up, but no, as you mentioned, Trevor, it then has to become this extended montage of 5 to 10 minutes. And because I did, hearing a lot about Paul Williams having had a lot to do with the music, I was always sort of having halfway through the movie, I was thinking, I thought there'd be more songs in this film. But it's almost like Paul Williams has written all these songs and like, God, we better put them all in. We'll shove them all at the start and all at the end. But apparently even the director actually made Paul Williams and the actors learn and actually record the full songs, even for her to only use one line. So this is, sort of showing how another reason why the budget went completely, overboard. So, but gosh, I don't think I want to buy the soundtrack.
No.
To hear them in their entirety. No thanks.
And the final gag of their record up on the wall and being advertised
alongside
and,
Peter Gabriel,
and it's already with a big on sale or discounted logo on it. It's like, good as over.
maybe they were sitting for a sequel, Trevor. God, I hope not.
Yeah, that's just a horrible, horrible thing to say, Christian.
Yeah. Well, both. It's funny because apparently just after it came out, Dustin Hoffman said, I had a great time. I'd do it again in a second. However, a few years have passed and they now often say it's the worst film they ever did, and they'll often bring it up as a gag on talk shows. the one that they're embarrassed about. It will always be Ishtar.
Right. Well, I don't know if this next bit's particularly necessary, but I guess it's time to look at if there's anything redeemable in this movie. So I suppose we have set this pattern. You suggested the movie, so I shall start. And I guess trying to sum up my thoughts on this movie is that, there may be a laugh or two at the very, very start, but basically the jokes start bad and then just get, driven into the ground. The only reason the slapstick with the blind camel got a laugh out of me was pretty much because it was the closest thing to actual comedy in the entire movie. And just when you look at it as at a comparative level to what you've got to put up with the rest of the movie, well, I guess slapstick always has a bit of amusement behind it. They were obviously trying to hang this movie very much on the star power of Hoffman and Beatty, but there was just no chemistry between them, and their characters, the actual characterizations provided were just so shallow. And these are two good actors who have range. And I really can't say anything about the rest of the movie because, frankly, everything that happened was just either unfunny, uninteresting, or just plain boring. So this movie is in no way redeemable. Christian, what are your thoughts?
Oh, Trevor, you've summed up pretty much how exactly what I feel about the film. I just feel I wanted to give it so much. I wanted to like it, after hearing all this stuff about the background of it and how it was plagued with these problems. But really, I think those problems, you know, probably started from day one with the whole concept of the film. And I just think it plagued the entire thing. And as a result, it is visible on screen that there really is just not a film that can really sustain an hour and 40 minutes, you know. And they were, as you said, using their star power to try and bring it in. And interestingly, either side of this film, both actors won Academy Awards, you know. So it baffles you, you know, what went wrong, you know. Must have been the time when the lunatics took over the asylum or something over at Columbia Pictures. But look, I think the biggest thing is, for me, that I take from this film is it cost $51 million to make. And if anyone out there listening to the podcast sees the film and could tell me where that $51 million is, I would very much like to know. But I definitely think, I would love to say, hey, everyone, go out and see the one of the most notorious box office flops and one of the worst movies of all time, because you will enjoy it. But really, it's one of those bad movies that's so bad it's bad. And I really just can't redeem it, Trevor. You know, I even thought maybe I could go the angle of, you know, I quite like the music of the other film music of Paul Williams, but how can you enjoy a score that's purposely written to be bad? It's sort of, you can't even enjoy it in that respect. So, yeah, I think as a result, Trevor, we need another film to wash our brain of this.
So that's a resounding not redeemable, but as we know, ours are not the only opinions out there. So before we go on to what I've chosen for our next potentially redeemable feature, I've gone back to Amazon and we've got a review here by one Nathan Johnson, who, the tagline is "Gut-busting clever comedy got a bad rap. Ishtar is the most wrongfully maligned movie of all time. Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman are hilarious in this buddy farce about the fantastic misadventures of two passionate, sincere songwriters who can neither sing nor write, but who truly think they're great. Think they're Simon and Garfunkel. The deluded duo can't get a gig anywhere but Morocco, where they become entangled in a revolutionary espionage and ride around the desert on a blind camel. Ishtar was the movie which made me decide to like Warren Beatty. He and Hoffman have dynamic charisma together, each playing their characters with endearing sincerity, which adds to the hilarity. Every scene crackles with memorable dialogue and slapstick gags. One of my personal favourite lines comes when Hoffman is threatening to kill himself because he has nothing. Beatty tells him that that's what's great about him. You're the kind of guy who'd rather have nothing than settle for less. Ishtar was a financial failure because it went way over budget and was poorly marketed. It was doomed to bomb before it ever came out. But what does that matter to us now? The fact is that this classic comedy is in league with all of your favourites, and you're only depriving yourself of a lot of good belly laughs if you don't give Ishtar a look. 5 stars.
Did they watch the same movie, Trevor?
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, maybe they had the wrong DVD in the case or something.
I just think Ishtar and hilarious are two words that shouldn't be said in the same sentence. That stood out to me.
Well, listen, if anybody out there has seen Ishtar, I certainly wouldn't recommend you watch it to find out for yourself, because, well, if you enjoy bleak, depressing non-comedy, I guess you could have a look, but we'd love to hear your thoughts. So all those details will be at the end of the podcast of how you can get in touch with us. But let's move on to other things, shall we? And I've decided that after Christian got me to sit down to watch the dubious sextet a little while back, being one of Christian's guilty pleasures that I could not see the appeal in, I thought I'd return the favour, Christian. So would you like to hear what I've picked for us next time?
Oh, okay, go ahead, Trevor.
So it's a bit more recent, and it actually has someone who has appeared in another Redeeming Features movie that we looked at recently. Not the main character, but does have an overlap. And that movie is 2006 DOA Dead or Alive. It's rated 4.8 on IMDb. You got to give it that.
I have heard of it, Trevor. I have heard of it, but not seen it. So you've set up a challenge for us.
Absolutely. So it's another video game movie. And I've got to admit, this is a guilty pleasure of mine. I will not go more into that right now, obviously we'll save that for the next podcast. But I really think, given your take on Double Dragon, which you seem to enjoy more than I did, when we watched that particular fighting game turn to a movie, I am actually very, very curious as to what you will come back with after watching DOA, Dead or Alive. Oh, by the way, DOA does stand for Dead or Alive, so the full title of this movie is Dead or Alive, : Dead or Alive.
Oh, cool. Oh, thanks for summing it up for us, Brad. But I'm looking forward to checking out one of your guilty pleasures. And I think coming into it from a knowing absolutely nothing, and I won't even read any back. I'll watch the film, of course, but I won't read any background about the film because, yeah, I want to see what I'm in for. Yeah. Go in it completely cold. So it'll be interesting, Trevor.
Yeah. And see if you can spot Natasha Malte, who we previously saw as Rain in Blood Rain 2, in this movie.
Oh gosh! Oh, it's good to see the crossover. but no, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And Trevor, look, to me, it's not the Rufus Project or a redeeming features without a video game adaptation every couple of months. I really think that's become quite a standard. So I'm looking forward to I'm looking forward to seeing this Dead or Alive.
It's such a deep well of dodginess when you go to video game movies.
That's a review in a nutshell for us there, Trev. Giving me more reason to want to see it now.
Fantastic. Well, I guess we'll chat about that next time. Thank you, sure, Christian.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much, Trevor. Speak to you next time.
These men are pawns.
I put a price of 20,000 dirham on their heads.
Next, they will be hailed as the true messenger of God.
They were just a couple of songwriters who came to Ishtar to break into show business.
Easy boy.
What the hell's the matter with him? Is he blind?
Well, yeah, he is, but he's in perfect condition.
So how do they wind up on everyone's hit list?
Your life is in danger.
Behave normally. We have guns pointed at your back. No, don't put your hands up, you idiot.
My little darling. My little darling.
I can't believe these men may control the fate of the Middle East.
Just a quick heads up before we start the wonderful interview with Rachel that I mentioned in the intro. This was done at a rather noisy bar. It was a great chat, a great environment, but a bit of background noise. I did what I could. You can hear us clearly, but again, just warning you, there's background noise. Okay, enjoy.
Okay, well, I'm here with Rachel Lee, actress, entertainer, musician, dancer, Bollywood dancer extraordinaire. And Rachel is going to give us a bit of a crash course and a bit of a chat about the whole Bollywood scene in Brisbane. And I'm sure many, many other things. So I'll probably just keep going with this. Rachel, hello, and thanks for talking to the Rufus Project.
Namaste. Thanks for having me, Trevor. It's a pleasure being here.
Excellent. Excellent. So I suppose to start, I must admit, when I see your stuff that you post and you share around, there actually seems to be a lot of like Bollywood events and appearances. I didn't really think there was that much of a Bollywood scene in Brisbane, but I'm getting the feeling I may be mistaken about that.
I suppose it's like any scene that, you know, if it's not a scene you're interested in, then you're not really going to hear or know about it. So there is quite a scene in the Bollywood because we have such a strong Indian community in Brisbane. So it's just that it's probably not as advertised as much as sort of standard, you know, Brisbane events. So it's just a matter of knowing where to look for upcoming events and, you know, who to ask. So that was one of the reasons with the Facebook page, I try to promote a lot of events on there so that people know.
Very cool, very cool. And I also noticed that you've been playing quite a bit your Bollywood dance classes and dance school. So maybe just give us a quick rundown of how you got involved with that and I suppose what's involved.
Wow, well, I've been I suppose it started from the entertainment industry, having been involved in the entertainment industry for, God, 20-odd years now. And it was through a theatre show that I got involved with Bollywood specifically. And from there, one thing led to another, and I ended up teaching sort of a beginner's class, which was on recommendation of my Bollywood dance teacher at the time. And yeah, I suppose I didn't sort of look back. It was one of those things that when you find your passion and something just clicks and you just know that that's just what you want to do. So now I've been running my own little dance school for about 4 years. I run a dance troupe, specifically Bollywood dance troupe, which we were the first dedicated Bollywood dance troupe to start in Brisbane. There are a couple of others that have started up now, but it's definitely a growing scene. I think that with movies like Slumdog Millionaire, Pride and Prejudice, even, God forbid I say it, The Love Guru, all of which I would like to point out are not Bollywood films, but they have created an interest in the Bollywood scene for the Western society. So it's made people more aware of the scene and what it's all about. But the Bollywood film industry has actually been around, if not longer than the Hollywood scene. Both of them started in the 30s. The only probably difference is that, Hollywood stopped making musicals in the late 50s, and Bollywood just kept going. Because they knew they were onto a good thing, so they didn't stop. So there are a couple of nightclubs in the valley that often have Bollywood sort of Bollywood themed nightclubs, I should say. They do tend to play a lot more Bhangra stuff, which is the North Indian Punjabi region folk music style. It's quite interesting because it's the sort of dance that the guys are usually the first ones to get up on the dance floor on, which you don't see in a Western nightclub as much. And there's also Bollywood films that are screened at several cinemas around Brisbane, such as the Maya Centre, Mount Gravatt and Sunnybank. Now, so Event Cinemas and Hoyts both show Bollywood film screenings if you're looking to see something different to your normal Hollywood film.
Because, I've got to admit, I'm yet to watch a full Bollywood film, and I'm ashamed of myself for that. But, you see the scenes, and you see, especially some of those dance numbers, it's just so vibrant and colourful and exciting. It's a wonder why it's not a wider thing. What do you think might be some of the things blocking that? I mean, because I can't see any reason why Bollywood shouldn't be more popular.
I think it's probably a lot to do with the fact that most of the films are still in Hindi and are subtitled. So there are, not a lot of people like sitting in a film and reading subtitles the whole way through. Especially when you're talking Bollywood, which, is generally at least 3 hours for a movie. Not like your standard Hollywood 2 to 2.5. So it can get, a bit much for some people. It is a shame. They do speak English, and they are starting to put a little bit more English in here and there, but they are predominantly still filmed in Hindi. It is good fun though, and if you've never seen a true Bollywood film, it's definitely something I would recommend, because it's completely different to a Hollywood film. It's not something you can take seriously, so you have to go sort of to a film and keep that in mind when you're watching it, that it is going to be cheesy, and it's probably going to be a rip-off of some Hollywood film that generally they might be a rip-off of a Hollywood film, but they would put big song numbers in there that sort of sometimes seem out of place but just work.
Yeah.
With the numbers in the film, the music is quite important aspect to the Bollywood film. I should point out that there are Bollywood films that don't have music in them, but there aren't too many. Because that is their success sort of formula, that's what people love. Even things like, they used to say, they don't kiss in Bollywood films, and they'll go to kiss and then they'll break out into song. they do, because of the Western influence now, they do sort of have sort of broken that rule a little bit, but they still keep them very family friendly, so they are suitable for the whole family. But a lot of the music they'll have, with big Bollywood films, they'll have what's called an item number. The item number is a musical number, usually with a hot, sexy looking dancer, that generally doesn't have any relevance to the film itself, that is used to pre-promote the film. So they'll release the song prior to the film opening as a way of promotion. And the song is usually then in the film somewhere, or it could be in a nightclub scene or something, or it could be at the end of the film. And that's what they refer to as item numbers, and the girls are referred to as item girls. So they're usually some gorgeous-looking girl that's designed to attract attention and you know, bring in the audience.
Fair enough.
Very cool.
Very cool. I'm going to rectify that. I promise I'm going to rectify that. I'm going to sit myself down and give myself some Bollywood.
Well, you should definitely come then to my Bollywood movie social on the long weekend in June. So it's a Queen's Birthday weekend. So Monday the 8th of June, I'm pretty sure I've got that right, will be from about 4 o'clock onwards. So it won't be a too late night because most of us have to work the next day. And it does allow for the fact that it is a 3-hour movie. But the movie I'll be showing is Ye Jawani, Hai Diwani, which is a classic sort of Bollywood love triangle with lots of great music, great songs in it. So it'll be definitely enjoyed. It will be held at the Latvian Community Hall, which is on Bank Lane at Woolloongabba. And the cost will just be a $5 entry to cover the hall hire and costs. And you can bring your own food and drinks, so if you, you know, need to have a drink to get through it, or you want to get up and dance, you can do that too.
Ah, super duper. Well, I guess, knowing that, I mean, I was having a little peek earlier on, and I see there's a few things coming up. One thing that really caught my eye was, I think in July, there's like a dinner, a Bollywood dinner.
The soiree,
yeah.
That's actually on the long weekend of June as well.
Okay.
So that's the Saturday night. No, the Sunday night. Sorry, the Sunday the 7th. And that's a fundraiser for Destiny Rescue, which is a friend of mine is actually one of the organisers, and it's something that's very close to her heart and something that I'm happy to support as well. It's all about the rescuing children from slavery. So they have done a few Bollywood themed events which we have performed for. So the soiree will be held down at the Marigold restaurant on Broadbeach on the 7th. It is a ticketed event, so the details are on our Facebook page and our newsletter, which just went out as well. But it's definitely for a great cause. And the Marigold, I think, last year were the best Indian restaurant in Queensland award. So I have eaten there. It is actually very lovely. So it is definitely worth going to support. Plus, if you're looking to dress up, because it is a Bollywood-themed night, you can contact me for a special discount on a costume if you need something to wear.
Ooh, there we go. Exclusive.
So, yes, I'm offering 20% off for anyone that hires a costume to wear to the event. I won't be there myself, but I do have two of my best dancers performing that night. So you will also get entertained with some lovely Bollywood entertainment, as well as I think they've got a belly dancer there as well.
Lovely. Now, we'll be putting all the links in the description below, so make sure you guys go to the description, click on links, and obviously support. It's a fantastic course, I mean, really. But to wrap it up, if somebody out there, say, can't make your movie night, or is just so a bit daunted by the range of movies out there, or what they can see, what would you recommend would be a good starting point, a couple of movies to get people going on their Bollywood adventure?
Wow, there are so many movies out there. Bollywood is actually the biggest film industry in the world when you're talking number of movies made. So they make so many more than Hollywood. It's hilarious. If you're talking by amount of money, Hollywood still wins. But yeah, definitely Bollywood. But if you're looking to sort of get started and you're not really sure with movies, I would definitely recommend Om Shanti Om. the movie with Shah Rukh Khan, who's one of Bollywood's biggest male stars. It's a very cheesy sort of love triangle sort of movie with some great music. And it's sort of a story that it's got definitely got some humour in it. Another great one would be the whole of the Doom series. There's like Doom 2 and Doom 3, which is all follows these two cops and sort of their journeys, and they're sort of a cross between Lethal Weapon and Tango and Cash, and with a bit of cheese and humour and Matrix style slow action scenes, very cheesy once again, some good music, some great actors in that as well. If you're more of a romantic, then Devdas is, that's quite a long movie, but it's once again, there's a love triangle, which is a very common theme in the film.
I've heard that.
But it has a very much a classical flavour as well, because Bollywood dance encompasses a lot of Western dance styles in it now, but it does stem from classical dance. So you've got the two main styles. There's eight classical dance styles that are known, well known, but the two main ones are Kathak, which is North Indian, and Bharatanatyam, which is South Indian. And Devdas actually has some beautiful classical Kathak style dancing in it as well, and it's definitely a, you know, bring a box of tissues sort of style of a movie. So it's definitely a romantic, not really comedy, but one that, you know, if you want to impress your girlfriend, it's worth watching. And then finally, the last one I'll probably just mention for now is Ram Leela, which only came out last year, I think, from memory. And that's Romeo and Juliet style of a movie as well. So very lovely. They do actually do kids' movies as well, I should point out. So I actually remember going to the movies once, and there was two Bollywood films showing. I had to decide, couldn't decide which one. And the one I ended up going to see turned out to be a cartoon movie. It was called... No, actually, I can't remember what it was called. I remember what the other movie was called because I didn't see that one. But, Tunku Ka Superhero was the name of the movie. It was a cross between sort of any sort of superhero movie and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So, you know, where you have the humans and then the cartoons and the worlds meet.
Yep.
So it's a little bit like that. So it was actually quite an interesting movie.
Awesome. I'm going to have to put some trailers down below too, I think.
Yeah, you can get them all off YouTube.
Oh, there you go. Very nice. Okay, well, Rachel, thank you so much for talking to us. And again, thanks so much for talking to the Rufus Project.
Shukriya, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope we can chat again sometime. And I hope to see you at the movie social.
Oh, I'm going to try to get there.
And I will finish off with saying Fumilenge, which is their way of saying I'll see you later.
Really excited on Wednesday the 29th of April to bring back the Jim Henson, David Bowie 1986 cult classic Labyrinth to the big screen. That is happening at New Globe Theatre at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are $10 at the door. However, I do recommend pre-booking for this, as Labyrinth is always very popular. Now moving on into May, Friday the 8th of May, get ready to dance this mess around with the world's greatest party band. Yes, it's a tribute to the B-52s with a video party. Included in the night will be their recent Greatest Hits concert live, followed by rare clips and live footage. Tickets are $10 at the door for that, and that's Friday the 8th of May, kicking off at 7 o'clock and running until late. I'd love to see you all down at the Love Shack to dance like rock lobsters. I'm excited to be producing the play A Dream Play by August Strindberg, which is taking place as part of Anywhere Theatre Festival this year. Kicking off on Sunday the 10th of May, head to my website for more information about that. Are you a fan of The Smiths? I know I am. On Thursday the 28th of May at New Globe Theatre, we're celebrating Morrissey's birthday with a Smiths video party. Very similar to what we're doing with the B-52s. This will include concert footage, live clips, and many music videos to keep you going for the night. That kicks off at 6:30 on Thursday the 28th of May, and tickets are $10 at the door. Looking ahead to June, we've got movies such as A Hard Day's Night, Tommy, the Filipino Bond movie For Your Height Only, and many more. For more details, visit www.christianfletcher.com and visit my events page on Facebook. I look forward to seeing you very soon.
Like the sound of that B-52's video party at the New Globe Theatre on Friday the 8th of May starting at 7 p.m? Well, Christian, in his generosity, has given me a double pass to that very event that you can win. You know what, I've decided that I am going to start making things a bit more difficult. Well, when I say difficult, I'm going to ask you a really, really easy question. So if you would like to win this wonderful, wonderful prize, simply answer this question. Can you name the B-52's big first hit? Simply leave your answer on any of the usual places, which I will be going through very, very shortly, for your chance to win this great prize. Good luck, and we hope to see you there. Thank you so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Feel like giving us a bit of feedback, comments, suggestions, requests, or entering that great competition? Could not be simpler. Simply find The Rufus Project on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream. Head to therufusproject.podomatic.com and you can leave your comments, suggestions, entries, etc. right there. You can also contact us by email at rufusreviews@gmail.com. Now, if you are someone or you have an event that you think would be a good fit for our local wildlife section, definitely we would love to hear from you as well, and all those contact methods work just as well for you guys too. If you really like the Rufus Project, why not leave us a review on iTunes? That would be super duper extra special. Now, the moral of this podcast is, if you take away ways people can access your stuff, yes, they're going to pirate it, HBO. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Imagine that, with the lyrics being written painfully slowly over about a 10 to 15 minute period, with the same line said over and over and over again, and you've got the intro to Ishtar. Yes, it is that painful. It's definitely a contender for the worst redeeming features movie this year. You better believe it.
Because life is the way we audition for God. Let us pray that we all get the job.